Well, we are living in a polarized world, and our polarized world today is vastly different than it was 6 months ago. But here's what we all know. Yeah, the specifics has greatly changed, but the tension has always been there. This week, I sat down and I did a simple internet search. I put in there what topics not to discuss at family gatherings, family dinners. And I did a second one, you know, what topics not to discuss at work. And what was interesting between these lists, they were almost all identical. And well, three polarizing P's were on both lists. Like, these are the topics of conversations we should avoid at all costs, whether it's a holiday dinner, a family gathering, or sitting around the work table. I'm pretty sure that all of you will guess at least two out of the three. The first one is just parenting. I mean, have you ever been at that gathering or maybe at work and there's that one person that is the expert on all things parenting? They read that blog, they read that book, they went to that conference, and now they're an expert, and they are a parenting expert, and you're not. Experts just say, just stay away from that conversation. And again, we're not talking about a mentorship relationship. We're saying, hey, don't have that polarizing conversation. Number two, I'm sure you all will get, politics. Yeah, and we are in an election cycle, and we all know, maybe your family has a no politics policy. I mean, you show up for Thanksgiving dinner and you just know it's spoken, it's unspoken, just no one bringing it up. For some of you, you're in your car driving to that family gathering and you're lecturing your spouse, your husband, your wife, your kids. Don't talk about politics. We all know how polarizing politics, no matter what side you lean on, politics, always polarizing, which leads to the third polarizing P, which is finances. And I desperately try to find a P word for finances, and the closest I could get was the word philanthropy, which is, it's an okay word, but not really what the heart of finances is. And so I thought to myself, well, why can't we spell finances with a PH? There's plenty of words that sound like they start with an F that don't. I mean, think about philosophy and photons and phosphorus and philanthropy. So let's just start writing finances with a PH. I think we should go with it. And right now, some of you grammar spelling experts, this is driving you nuts. But right, just stay away from finances. We're not talking about a mentor relationship. We're just talking about sitting around a dinner table or around the conference room table. It's like, hey, just like stay away from these subjects. I mean, just stay away from them. Stay away from them. Why? Because they're so polarizing. Well, another one that emerged on all these lists was religion, church, faith, spirituality. I mean, do you have one of those bad church experience stories? Is why you don't want to walk back into a physical campus because you have one of those bad polarizing church experiences in your past? Are you finding yourself right now, you're online and you want to be known, but you're scared. Why? Because the hurt from that bad church experience still lingers. That scar from that bad church experience is still there. I have a couple bad church experience stories that were so polarizing. You see, the church must be unified. And a unified church is the answer to our polarized world. And when I say a unified church, I'm not talking about denomination. I'm not talking about building. What I'm talking about, the church, a gathering of people that are pursuing a life to love, live, and lead like Jesus, that type of church. And here's what Jesus knew. A unified church is the answer. That's why Jesus prayed, John chapter 17, read it. He prayed for the unity. Why? Because what Jesus knows is when the world sees a unified church, they're going to lean in. They're going to lean in. They're going to lean in. So in this series, the question that we've been circling around, the question we're going to answer today is, how do we lead in our polarized world? Now, there's going to be three very, very specific actions that helps us answer how to lead in our polarized world. And there's two different viewpoints in which you can apply these three different actions. At one viewpoint, well, these three actions are just great insights on how to lead. And so maybe for you, you're not sure about the Bible, you're not sure about Jesus. We're going to be looking at this interaction with a guy named the Apostle Paul. Maybe you're not sure about the Apostle Paul. I just want you to know, like, these very three very specific actions, if you apply to your life, are going to help you lead. And remember, the leadership is, it's just influence. So if you have one relationship, right, you can influence, which means you're a leader. So these three actions that we're going to discover today will help you just lead. But there's a second viewpoint. You see, if you're a Jesus follower, well, these three actions are going to help you lead like Jesus. I mean, we're going to look at the Apostle Paul, and he's going to model these very three specific actions. But the Apostle Paul, well, he just didn't make them up himself. Apostle Paul was living his life to love, live, and lead like Jesus. And Apostle Paul is just reflecting who Jesus truly is. But remember, the Apostle Paul, some 2,000 years ago, he was leading in a politically charged, power-obsessed, religiously conflicted, morally corrupt world. Sound familiar? Yeah. The years click by. But we understand that our polarized world, well, it's been polarized for a very long time. Now, a guy named Luke is actually going to be telling us this story. And what I love about Luke is, well, his spiritual journey. Luke started out to prove or disprove that Jesus was real. He investigated everything about Jesus and interviewed countless eyewitnesses. And along the way, he became a Jesus follower. And not only became a Jesus follower, he loved, lived, and led like Jesus. And well, in this interaction with Apostle Paul, now Luke, well, his whole entire life is he's now traveling with the Apostle Paul. So Luke is there recording this story. So let's jump in and remember three very specific actions on how to lead in our polarized world. Well, Paul was waiting for them, then meaning of Silas and Timothy, in Athens. Athens, Greece, the great city of Athens. Paul was greatly distressed at what? What was he greatly distressed at? To see the city was full of idols. Now, Paul's in Athens, and he could have been greatly distressed with a whole list of polarizing things. He could have been greatly distressed at the moral corruption of Athens. He could have been greatly distressed at the political infrastructure of Athens. Paul could have been greatly distressed about who was going to be the new emperor of Rome at one day, right? He could have been greatly distressed. He could have had incredible amounts of emotional tension and a whole list of things that, well, he was navigating through in this polarized world. But what was he distressed about? All the idols. All the idols. He looked around and realized that people weren't following the one true God. You see, the Apostle Paul had a kingdom perspective. Remember that in a polarized world, it tries to get your eyes focused off of God and on everything else going around you. And Paul, in his polarized world, kept his eyes focused on who God was, sovereign God. He was on the move. And Paul desperately wanted to lead, to be a part of God's movement. So what does Paul do? Well, Paul, reasons in the synagogue with both Jews and God-fearing Greeks, as well in the marketplace. The marketplace was the agora. It was the hub of Athens. It's where you came and you bought goods and sold goods. It was the place where news was shared from around the world as travelers came in. It was a place where the great philosopher Socrates was known to, during his day, to walk through the agora. And anyone who wanted to talk with Socrates, he would engage in a conversation. I mean, the marketplace, the agora, was the hub. And Luke tells us that day by day, Paul was there with those who happened to be there. But Luke writes a very specific intentional word. He says Paul reasoned. He reasoned. He had a conversation. He had discussions with people. And this word is important because what Luke tells us next goes right against Paul's discussion, his conversation. Luke tells us that a group of Epicurean Stoic philosophers began to debate with Paul. Now, part one of this series, right, we know what happens in any debate. And there's something within all of us, right, that wants to win. And in any debate, there's always a winner. And when there's a winner, there's a loser. And in life, there's no participation trophies. And not only did these philosophers, these Stoic Epicurean philosophers, want to debate with Paul, they personally attacked Paul. Some of them said, hey, what is this babbler trying to say? And others remarked, he seemed to be advocating foreign gods. But Paul didn't take the bait. They didn't allow their personal attacks against him to suck him in, to take his eyes off the kingdom perspective down in this polarized world, because Paul realized there's something so much important, more important at stake. And then Luke gives us this insight. He said, they said this because Paul was preaching the good news, the gospel about Jesus and the resurrection. So these philosophers took Paul and they walked him to this place called the Areopagus. It sits right in the middle of the city, in the shadows of the Acropolis. I was there in November. It's an incredible place. And the Areopagus was also called called Mars Hill. And this is where the Council of Ares met. Now, Ares was the Greek god for thunder, for war. It's where we get the name Areopagus. Now, you might be wondering, well, why was it also called Mars Hill? Well, remember, in mythology, the Greeks had their names for their gods. And then Rome comes along, and they just basically, they take all of the Greek gods, and they just give them Roman names. So the Roman name for Ares, the god of thunder and war, is Mars. And at this Council of Ares is where all of the political decisions were made, is how the city was ran, and all the people of power and influence sat there. And so these Epicurean and Stoic philosophers brought Paul to the Areopagus, where all of the movers and shakers of Athens were. And Paul, they wanted to hear about this good news. They wanted to hear about, this new religious perspective. And so Paul seized his moment. Remember, three very specific leadership insights. Not only just for us to lead in everyday life, but how for us, if you're a Jesus follower, to lead like Jesus. So Paul stands up in front of the whole Areopagus, and this is what he says. He says, people of Athens, I see that in every way you are pagans and are going to burn in the fires of hell. He didn't say that at all. But is your bad church experience kind of like that? As I looked at different church signs, photos that you find on the internet, it was interesting to me the number of these church signs that had the word hell on them. Now, I'm not saying that we shouldn't talk about hell. I'm not saying that hell isn't real. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying Is that the starting place? For you, you might have ran away from church just because that was the starting place. And Jesus just modeled something completely different. So did Paul. You see, this is what Paul said. Paul said, I see that in every way you are very religious. You see, the action, the leadership action. We must fight for common ground. That was common ground. Paul goes, hey, I see that we're all very religious. You're very religious. I'm very, we're very religious. Common ground. Now, what the religious construct was vastly different, right? Who they believed in as God or their gods, and well, Paul's viewpoint on God, completely different. Their doctrine, their theology, right? How they would even talk about faith, completely different. But Paul fought, in a polarized word, fought for common ground. And as leaders, we must always fight for common ground. As spiritual leaders, people that are leading like Jesus, we must fight for common ground because a polarized world always wants to separate and segregate and put people up in silos. But there's something about when we fight for common ground. If you're divorced or going through a divorce, you know how polarizing that experience is. You know it. Sides are taking, family members are taking sides, friends are taking sides, everyone's taking sides. And you just grow more and more and more distance. But the couples, maybe you know this, the couples that fight for common ground. And if in a divorce situation, there's kids, the common ground is, it's the kids. The couples that say, you know what? We're polarized, but we're gonna fight for common ground. That means how we raise our kids together, how we educate our kids, how we dress our kids, how we care for our kids, the rules within the separate houses. The couples that say, you know what? Yeah, we're going through a divorce. We're divorced, but we're gonna fight for common ground. We want the best for our kids. Guess what happens to the relationship? It comes back together. But in a divorce, when the kids become pawns, it just becomes more and more and more polarized. You see, we must fight for common ground. And our world is screaming at us that there is no common ground. This side or that side, this perspective or that perspective. My way's the right way, your way's the wrong way. And we must find the common ground to stand on. And this is what Paul does. He goes, hey, I see that you're very religious. He doesn't say, hey, you're wrong. He goes, hey, I see that you are. I see that you are. But for Paul to discover the common ground, he had to do something else first. And that really leads to the first action. Fighting for common ground is number two, but it leads to the first one because Paul did something first before he discovered what the common ground was. And Luke tells us what he does. For as I walked around and looked carefully at your objects of worship. So Paul, before he even meets at the Areopagus, he's walking around. He's looking at all the different places of worship in Athens. You know what Paul discovers? He discovers that he finds this altar with the inscription to an unknown God. You see, the second action, and so important, is we got to focus on the other perspective. That's what Paul was doing. He realized that he had to find this common ground. In a polarized world, especially spiritually, he's like, hey, if you're gonna fight for this common ground, then guess what? Now we can do something. So what does he do first? He walks around and he focuses on their perspective. He's like, what do they believe? What do they worship? Where are they at in this whole spiritual discussion? Again, he didn't start off by telling them they were going to hell. He's like, I want to know where they are in their spiritual journey. I just tell you, the more polarizing our world becomes, the more our eyes go on ourselves, our perspective, our fears, our needs, our concerns, our desires, us. And that's why the kingdom perspective is so important. Because it is a kingdom perspective. God is sovereign and God is on the move. And he wants to link arms with you to be part of his movement. And that's what enabled Paul to focus on other people, because of his kingdom perspective. He had the message of hope for everyone, for everyone, for everyone. And so he starts saying, you know what? I'm gonna look through their lenses. I'm gonna go where they worship and where they walk and their vantage point. You see, that's powerful in leadership. The more we can try to understand where someone else is, that's where we start to fight for common ground. Now, what Paul says next might seem very polarizing, but give me a moment, because what he says is not that polarizing. Luke writes, so you are ignorant, right? That feels like a polarizing word, but what Paul was saying was, hey, you just don't know what you don't know. That's all he was saying. He's like, hey, you have an altar with an inscription to an unknown God. I understand that you're embracing, you're realizing, you just don't know what you don't know of the very thing you worship. And this is what I'm going to proclaim to you. Now Paul steps into something that's so incredible. He's focused on their perspective. He's fought for common ground. Hey, we're all very religious. And now, he's going to lead to the third action. He's going to lead to the third action. And this is what he says. The God who made the world and everything in it is the Lord of heaven and earth. There's kingdom perspective. And does not live in temples built by human hands. And he is not served by human hands as if he needed anything. Rather, he himself gives everyone life and breath. I mean, think about it. Part one and two in this series. The interaction with Jesus about taxes, but it wasn't about taxes. He asked the question, whose image? He was getting back to all people, everyone, made in the image of the Almighty God. And this is what Paul's saying. He's like, hey, rather, he himself gives everyone life and breath. They're made in God's image and everything else. From one man, he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so that they would, what? Seek him. I mean, Paul was like, hey, you got an altar to an unknown God. You're searching. You're seeking. You realize that there's a God that you might not know about. And I'm here to tell you about the God you might not know about. And perhaps even reach out to him and find him. Though, guess what? God is not far away at all. And then Paul does something so intentional. And what he says next, we call it a Bible verse, right? Verse 28 is a Bible verse. It's a verse in the Bible. But what Paul does leads to the third action step on how to lead in a polarized world. And this is so important. So especially if you're a Jesus follower, you can't miss this. This is what Paul says. For in him we live and move and have our being. As some of your own poets have said, we are his offspring. So what Paul does is quote two secular pagan poets, authors. Two of them. And at this point, he would have just landed these two secular pagan poets' statements. And everyone on Mars Hill, I mean, they would have known. They had been leaning in. They probably would have been a little surprised that Paul would have even known these words. But he lands these two statements. The first one, well, it's from a guy named Epimenides, and he wrote somewhere around 600 BC. And what he was writing was this poem from the Greek god Minos, who is a son of Zeus. And Minos was sharing these words about his father, Zeus, in their pantheon was God. And he writes, "They fashion a tomb for thee, O holy and high one, the Cretans, always liars, evil beasts, idle bellies. But thou art not dead, thou livest and abidest forever." And then here's the statement that Paul is quoting. "For in thee we live and move and have our being." The second one was from another poet, philosopher, writer. His name was Aratus. And Aratus, well, he was writing this hymn to the Greek god Zeus. And this is what he writes. "It is with Zeus that every one of us in every way has to do." And here's a line that Paul's quoting, right, from this pagan philosopher, poet. "For we are also his offspring." So all of a sudden, Paul lands these two points. And here's such an important leadership step. Yeah, focus on other people's perspective. Yeah, fight for common ground. But then you gotta find a connection point. And that's what Paul was doing. He found a connection point from their pagan secular writings, things that they would have studied in school, from other teachers, from their parents, right? They would have known this. And at that point, there was a connection point because Paul was taking them on a spiritual journey. I just want you to know, everything we do at Tri-County Church, of course, all of our churches, is this framework. We're focusing on other people's perspective, people that don't know about Jesus, don't know about God, maybe been hurt by the church, ran from the church, not sure about church, don't trust church people. Like, just know, we're always trying to focus on other people's perspective. We're trying to find common ground, and we fight for the common ground, and then we try to find connection points for people. In Kids Rock, we're trying to find connection points with kids because we want to help kids take a step on their spiritual journey. In our Velocity Student Ministries, we're trying to find connection points. Where are they in life? What do they like to do in life? What are they lensing through in life? And we just want to find those connection points and help them. And across all of our adult environments, like, we are just trying to find connection points. So if you ever wonder, well, why do you do it that way? I just want you to know our method to share Jesus with everyone and help all people take steps on their spiritual journey by loving, living, and leading like Jesus, everything we do is meeting people where they are and helping them take steps. And how have we learned to do this? Well, Paul. It's what Paul's doing. Paul's pulling in these secular pagan poems and say, hey, I know this is how you're lensing through your faith journey. I'm just gonna meet you where you are and take you on a journey. And oh, by the way, guess what? Jesus did the same thing. He met people where they were, found connection points, and took them on a journey. So at this point, you could just tell that everyone on Mars Hill was just leaning in. And Paul says, therefore, since we are God's offspring, we should not think that the divine being is like gold or silver or stone. And this is all they decorated all their altars and temples filled with gold and silver and stone. He's like, no, my God looks vastly different. An image made by human design and skill. And Paul's like, not my God. My God is not made by human hands. In the past, God overlooked such ignorance, but now, he commands all people, that includes you, all people, everywhere to repent, to turn and to face God. For he has set a day when he will judge the world with justice by the man. And notice, Paul doesn't use the name Jesus, because that name wouldn't meant anything to them at that moment. He said, hey, the world with justice by the man he's appointed. He has given proof of this to everyone by raising him from the dead. You see how Paul led people on a spiritual journey. So intentional. so intentional. And Luke tells us, some of the people sneered, but others said, we want to hear you again on this subject. And Paul left the council, and Luke tells us, well, some believed in Jesus. I mean, he writes this phrase, followers of Paul, they became followers of Paul. All that means is, well, Paul became their kind of spiritual leader, but they believed in Jesus. And among them was Dionysius, a member of the Areopagus, also a woman named Damaris, and a number of others. You see, we come back to this question, and the answer to this question, how are you going to lead in this polarized world? We have to. Hey, Jesus followers, listen, this is so important. We have to focus on others' perspective. We have to get our eyes off of ourselves and start trying to see what other people see, trying to discover what other people are going through, trying to shift around and try to grasp all of their thoughts and feelings. We got to ask questions. We got to be selfless and focus on other people. Number two, we got to fight for common ground. Fight for it. Fight. Because if we don't fight for common ground, this world will polarize the church. You, me, people. So let's fight for that common ground. And Jesus is that common ground. And let's find connection points. Let's meet people where they are and walk with them on their spiritual journey, teaching them to love like Jesus, to live like Jesus, and to lead like Jesus. How do we lead in a polarized world? Let's do those three things. And watch people come together. Let's pray. Lord, I thank you for Jesus living his life so we could live in reflection of him. Lord, I'm thankful for people like the Apostle Paul that pursued a life reflecting Jesus. Lord, that Luke, on his own spiritual journey, captured this moment because it is the image of what the church is about. Share the good news about Jesus with everyone. But how we go about doing that can be so polarizing, God, or it can be so unifying. So, Lord, may we lead like that. In your name I pray. Amen.